everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Media Voices. It's the only media-focused podcast in the entire world. I'm your host, Chris Sutcliffe.
I'm Esther Thorpe.
And no Peter this week, unfortunately, but we'll soldier on anyway. So, Esther, who did you talk to?
This week I spoke to Christoph Schmitz, who is Alamedia's product owner for paywalls, logins, subscriptions and CRM. Good time to be that in Norway.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we talked about managing technology and change across different brands, how Ala is taking advantage of the willingness to subscribe in Norway. We talked about their collaboration for single sign-on with other publishers and how GDPR has actually helped them take control of their data.
So a small topic then, you didn't talk about much.
Oh, loads.
But before that, as ever, we're going to go through this week's news. And I like to think that Media Voices act as a bit of a time capsule for media news. And this week, really the only media story worth talking about is Colleen Rooney's secondhand shaming of The Sun. So, I mean, you couldn't have avoided it this week, right?
I've sort of seen Colleen Rooney to sort out Brexit, Colleen Rooney Prime Minister. Chris, can you please explain for people who haven't been on Twitter this week what has gone on?
Yes, absolutely. So the footballer Wayne Rooney's wife, Colleen Rooney, has done a bit of detective work, which people somehow equated as being sort of the equal of Sherlock Holmes or Miss Marple, instead of what it actually is, which is the sort of thing that most teen girls probably do all the time. But nevertheless, she basically has, over the last year or so, suspected that somebody has been leaking stories from her private Instagram to The Sun. And in order to get to the bottom of who that was, she selectively blocked people. And this week, she revealed that the person, or rather the person's account, who has been leaking that news is Rebecca Vardy's account.
Who is Rebecca Vardy?
So Rebecca Vardy is another WAG, wife and or girlfriend of a professional footballer. So the implication seems to be there's a little bit of professional jealousy. But regardless, Colleen's detective work revealed that The Sun has been publishing stories which she has made up in order to catch out the thief.
Including something about gender reassignment in Mexico.
Yeah, this one was really weird. I mean, that is the point though, right? The fact that some of the stories were kind of realistic. Flooding of a mansion, that's completely realistic.
Given the weather this week, yes.
Well, exactly, yeah. But this gender determination thing was almost set up to be unrealistic and to catch somebody out. And The Sun, in particular, fell for it hook, line, and sinker.
I saw the Daily Mail as well.
And the Daily Mail. But the thing about that is that the Mail got that second hand from The Sun, because The Sun were the people who had access to, well, this account.
Are you saying the Daily Mail's copying The Sun?
I'm saying that
Chris,
everybody... I know, outrageous, right? But everybody was copying everybody else. And in the immediate aftermath of this all kind of breaking and Colleen saying, well, all these stories that have been reported are bullshit... people responded very differently. Metro wrote about it and sort of, I think they did a bit of a mea culpa and said, you know, we report on this uncritically without checking. The Sun just took the stories down completely, which I think is fairly cowardly for them. And I don't know what the Mail did, but this is bizarre. I felt such secondhand embarrassment for The Sun, who have just put this up without fact-checking, presumably just because they needed some, you know, $4 or $5, and they thought that this story would generate that in ad revenue.
But Rebecca Vardy has denied all this, hasn't she?
She has. She's basically said that, you know, she's launched a forensic investigation into how somebody who has access to her account could possibly have been doing this. And I saw somebody point out that Colleen has very cleverly said it wasn't Rebecca Vardy that did this, it was somebody who had access to Rebecca Vardy's account. So covering her arse is there. But it's been the capper to a few weeks that have demonstrated exactly how little fact-checking the tabloids have actually been doing before they put stories up online. Because a couple of weeks ago, the Mail Online printed this blatantly fake story that was, I think, planted by a PR agency about a game called Brexit Royale. Did you see this?
I missed this.
Yeah, so this one was fantastic. It was such an obvious fake. You know, they said that this game, kind of aping on the success of games like Fortnite, was allegedly to include the ability to dress players' characters in a variety of skins, from different suits for the politicians all the way to a pig's head in a nod to ex-PM David Cameron, and that in-game vehicles will include the Vote Leave's Let's Fund Our NHS Instead Brexit bus, Jeremy Corbyn's bicycle, and a zipline for Boris Johnson. It was catnip for the Mail, and they printed it without checking anything.
Why would we not launch that game? That sounds like a great game.
Honestly, I think it might be one of those things that gets defictionalized. So they saw the response to this and went, holy shit, actually, let's really do this. Like the red stapler from Office Space. And it's depressing that you expect there to be very little fact-checking done. It comes on the heels of some strong words from the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism's director, Rasmus Nielsen, and some other commentators at an event this week about Brexit and journalism, which basically slams the press and the tabloids particularly for not fact-checking even the most important political stories either. So this isn't just for kind of the journalism.
There's been loads of stuff this week about, there's been loads of stuff about people saying this week that we've got a deal agreed with Europe, and actually that's not the case at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
at the time of recording.
Oh, God, yeah. Everything changes. I'm going to, you know what? I'm actually going to put myself out there and say that there will not be a deal by the time this goes live.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so of that event, Press Gazette reports that on the panel, Jill Rutter, who's a senior research fellow at the UK in a Changing Europe, said journalists ought to tell Number 10 to speak on the record. You know, we've heard too much from Number 10 sources who are anonymous. And she, you know, she's pointing to Johnson's senior advisor, Dominic Cummings, quote, midnight ravings. And she said, I think journalists have been co-opted into being useful idiots for Number 10. Basically, uncritically. Ooh. I know, right? How good's that? Basically, uncritically printing stuff like this.
And so, do you think incidents like this will change the way that people...
No.
Okay.
Well, no, go on. What were you going to say?
I was going to say change the tabloid behaviour, but we can all go home now, okay?
No, absolutely not. I think they're too set in the ways. I'm not sure quite how much has changed. I've always assumed that the vast majority of stories that appear in, you know, say, the sidebar of shame haven't been fact-checked. They might have just been vetted to ensure that there is a slight veneer of legal protection if anybody comes after them. But it's really depressing to find out that a lot of foreign journalists who used to see British journalism as being the best in the world have now basically gone, they just don't fact-check and they just print anything in that desperate search for revenue.
That's a cheery way to start the week.
Sorry to bring everybody down, because the Colleen Rooney story is actually fantastic. Like, it was really funny. And not to, you know, be a millennial or anything, but all the memes I saw from it were absolutely incredible. Oh, and yeah, right, fair play to Potbitch for calling it the Scouse Trap, which is absolutely fantastic.
So who is responsible for Agatha Christie?
I don't know, because I think I saw the original tweet and then it went everywhere to the point that I think the Metro actually used that in the headline. So the only question now is who's going to play everybody in the inevitable film version.
I wish Peter was here to comment on this.
Yeah, I know. Well, first of all, he'd be completely bemused by it and then he'd get very angry, which is his MO.
Yeah.
So in more business-flavoured news, I suppose...
So this was a little bit out of the blue this week, but Group 9 owns The Dodo, The Thrillist, and Now That.
Why would you call a title The Dodo, a famously extinct creature?
I don't know.
That's so strange.
So they have agreed to acquire like a millennial women's publisher, Pop Sugar, which is hot on the heels of the Refinery 29 and Vice deal last week. So yeah, a lot of these places are just being snapped up. So, yeah, the deal this week has valued Pop Sugar at $300 million and Group 9 at $600 million.
Where are these numbers coming from? That can't be based on revenue.
Well, actually, Pop Sugar's revenue last year was $100 million.
Okay.
Group 9 is not profitable.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the ridiculous figure. Because this... Okay, what reasons have they given, effectively, for this acquisition? Why does this make sense for Group 9?
Okay, well, I mean, the theory is, and, you know, we did discuss this a little bit last week, is that these companies are all coming together and they're hoping to basically bulk up their audiences enough to help them compete with Google and Facebook. That's according to the Wall Street Journal anyway. So
I don't understand that reasoning, because when they say to compete with Google and Facebook, they're talking about scale.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily talking about, because, you know, Google and Facebook, that reach is only one part of what they do. They actually do a lot more besides.
But the reason Google and Facebook are so profitable, in fact, I mean, Facebook especially with advertising, and I've said this before, I'll say it until I've dropped dead of boredom, it's because they enable self-service, and it's at such a rate that small businesses and the long tail can do hyper-targeting.
That is exactly it, yeah.
You know, you can be a, I don't know, a butcher in Nottingham or a dressmaker in Leeds, and you can target whoever you want for a very low cost.
Yeah. You know, suddenly having, you know, more women coming to your properties, it in no way replicates that advantage.
I mean, Group 9 claimed to reach 70% of US millennials, but again, you know, Facebook aren't picking up massive deals from massive million-dollar deals from like Virgin and, you know, watchmakers and stuff like that. The bulk of Facebook's revenue, I think it's about 60% of their revenue comes from this long tail, and until publishers enable advertising for the long tail, it's not going to work.
This is, I mean, that 70% of US millennials, we were just talking about the ability to target. We've spoken in the past about how, in fact, do you remember, it was one of your very early bugbears when we started doing the podcast, is how millennial is effectively meaningless as a term.
What I don't get is like, what is the definition of millennial here? Are they thinking like 20-year-olds, or is it the true definition, which is now 25 to about 42?
it's ridiculous. I wonder what Gen Z is going to get blamed for.
I don't know.
Okay, so another M&A, which is pretty much one in a long list of acquisitions this year alone.
It feels like it's snowballing a bit, like they're just getting into bigger and bigger snowballs.
Yeah, I think the only thing we could do is basically reiterate what Neil Thackeray said, which is that, you know, if you've got two loss-making companies and you smash them together, what you're effectively left with is a bigger loss-making company. And even though that PopSugar is generating revenue, Group 9 has negative value in that respect.
So bets on who the next one's going to be. Who's going to buy BuzzFeed? Or who's BuzzFeed going to buy?
Oh, shit, yeah. And now onto the news in brief. Actually, something that we should mention before we really get into this is that Facebook, earlier in the week, was fined $40 million for kind of its inflated video metrics scandal. Which, $40 million doesn't really seem like a lot for that. Those inflated video metrics, which are in the sort of triple digits, you know, they were overestimating by up to 600%, I think I saw one tweet. That led to people doing the pivot to video, which led to so many people losing their jobs when that didn't pay off.
So the thing is here as well is that $40 million has gone to the agencies who were misled by this. So the publishers have seen none of it, even though they're the ones that turn their businesses around. But I mean, this isn't even a slap on the wrist. This is like a tap on the knuckles for Facebook.
That's a great phrase. Well, yeah, I think the only thing that we can do is basically reiterate what we said at the time and say, don't get into bed with Facebook. So moving on then, James Murdoch has bought a minority stake in Vice Media Group. He's been on the board of Vice for several years. If there's any one family who you would expect that Vice, counterculture Vice, wouldn't want to get in bed with, it would be the Murdochs.
James is apparently trying to distance himself from the whole like right-wing conservative stuff.
Ooh,
that is...
You surprised me, yeah. God damn it. I thought you were going to say he's trying to distance himself from his entire family, his family's legacy, his family's history, and his family's wives.
Apple has removed Quartz's mobile app from the Chinese version of its App Store, allegedly, after complaints from the Chinese government over their coverage of the Hong Kong protests. And apparently the Quartz's website has also been banned in mainland China. So this has got some quite big implications for other news publishers who cover the Hong Kong protests.
This is, I mean, good. Surely that's a mark that you're doing what you should be doing, speaking truth to power.
But Apple shouldn't be removing stuff.
Apple should be removing, and Apple have actually removed some other apps which have been, you know, similarly tarred by the Chinese government as enabling these protests, which just... I mean, these massive firms' relationships with China has always been problematic, and it's really been brought to the fore these last few weeks. Mm. There's, I don't know if you saw the news about the video game developer and publisher Blizzard.
Yeah, there was somebody said support the Hong Kong protests, and they completely took all his stream down.
Yeah, it was one of their key esports titles, Hearthstone. Their champion said, you know, basically said, yeah, he came out in support of the Hong Kong protesters. And their response was so terrible. They stripped him of his winnings. They banned him from a year from competing in this. They took his stream down, as he said. And it took concerted and consistent outcry and protests from their players to basically get them to reverse it. Well, reverse part of it. I think he's still banned from 6 months. It's pathetic, particularly because these publishers like Apple has tried to present itself as being kind of this very liberal...
Privacy-focused.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, yeah, exactly. And then all of a sudden, it's basically come out and just said, actually, you know what? But what's more important is corporate profit. So Geo Media, which was formerly Gizmodo Media Group, has shuttered the news vertical Splinter, sort of political news, and has laid off the site's staff. People were disappointed. I think a lot of people thought that Splinter was doing some very good journalism. But at the same time, Gizmodo Media Group and its immediate predecessor, which was Gawker, have kind of a history of doing this kind of stuff and deleting the archives. So, understandable concern.
Esquire has introduced a limited edition capsule collection of menswear called the Esquire Edit. They've collaborated with 10 of the best brands in menswear, so I will refrain comment on what I think of the collection.
And excitingly, the BBC is revamping iPlayer to include podcasts. So this is as part of its stated aim to make iPlayer the heart of everything that the BBC does, which, good. I mean, it's always been a kind of a mainstay in my media consumption habits. And the fact that they're introducing podcasts to it right at the time when my usual podcast app broke is great news.
Yeah, I think the BBC do like such a wide variety of podcasts, and they do some amazing stuff. And it's
really
quite
do.
Difficult to track down like a comprehensive page of the BBC's podcasts. So yeah, this is great. And then finally, I think we'll do a deeper dive on this when we know more. But Apple is apparently looking to create a mega bundle that includes music, video, games, and maybe news, all for one monthly price. Everything goes round in circles. It'll be mega bundles, and they'll split it off, and then it'll be mega. Oh my word!
I don't think this goes far enough. If I'm going to sign up to a mega bundle, I want it to include my rent. I want it to include bills. I want it to include, like, I basically want to pay one flat fee and it'll just give me everything I want. I guess, you know what, thinking about it, that's maybe just like a nursing home or a hotel. So don't forget we have a transcript section on our website thanks to a partnership with Trint. So you can visit voices.media/transcripts to read all of our interviews.
So this week's interview is with Christoph Schmitz, the product owner at Aller Media in Norway. He's recently spent some time as their interim CTO as well, and he's dealt with everything from how they deal with logged in users to CRM to paywalls, digital subscriptions, the lot. So I began by asking him what his role at Aller Media has actually involved over the past few years.
I've been in Aller Media for 3.5 years. And I've had a large amount of different products. I've handled video for some time. We have a site for health-related content where we added video consultancies with doctors and, done a lot of different things in all there.
And Aller Media itself has got quite a few different titles. It's got both magazines, newspapers, and it's also made a few acquisitions. So how do you manage technology and change when you've got that much of a, like, that much brand variety?
Well, it takes time, obviously, to align different brands and titles. I think it started at the time when I started in Aller Media, where we basically had three different development departments, and we had different CMSs running in different service centers, and lots of different teams. And over the time, we have sort of merged all of our titles into one common CMS. Moved everything out of the old servers into the cloud, and basically having a clear plan of where we're going. So, and then starting to move titles, but it takes time. I have to be patient about this.
Norway is one of the few places in Europe where paying for news is actually growing, which is always nice. So how has Aller Media turned itself from being one of the old school publishers, because it's got quite a legacy, into one which is able to actually technologically take advantage of this rise in willingness to subscribe? I think you're at the forefront of some of that work.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a very exciting place to be as well. I mean, Dagbladet, which is our biggest title, it's the second largest newspaper in Norway, also the biggest, the most increasing one in terms of readers at the moment as well. They started with premium content and premium subscriptions back in March 2013. So they have been doing it for quite some time. And I think it was June or July that same year, Aller Media bought Dagbladet, because Aller Media had then basically been print magazines and one digital magazine site and a news aggregator called Sol, which used to be the start of internet in Norway back in the 90s. Internet used to start with Sol. But I mean, having Dagbladet as a title And Dagbladet was, has been for many years, very digital and in the digital forefront, also in the newspaper industry, has sparked and driven a lot of the digital change in all of Aller. So being very traditional, magazine, print, getting something in the same building and in the same organization that is so digitally driven has, of course, done something with the rest of Aller in Norway, specifically. And I think it's just now until recently, and I think the last year, where we have started to look into what else can we do with digital subscriptions. So we started a site, I think it's in March this year, so it's nearly half a year, called Elbil 24. It's about electrical cars. And they are very close of now getting 1,000 subscribers to their
Wow.
site. And of course it takes 3 months to start something, and then you have the summer. So over the summer they have really had a good growth in terms of cold starting a brand new site with a new brand as well. And then obviously we are looking into other types of content that we can sell digital subscriptions for as well. And that's definitely a very exciting place to be.
So how does the paywall work on Dagbladet?
We had something that we initially had built for Dagbladet, as it was basically a prototype that has been added an extra room here and added an extra bathroom there, and you know how it is. It's kind of like a tree house that has been growing for a couple of years. So we tore everything down and rebuilt it over the last year and made it scalable for all of Aller. So now we have a common setup. We just add a product, and then we can basically set on any site that this article, you need to have access to this product in your session when you're logged in to get the access, and if not, you will get the paywall. So as we have made everything onto the same platform, built everything to scale, it really does scale, and that's super exciting. So we're not actually paying that much attention to that now. It's more into how can we help the conversion when people want to subscribe, and we are focusing on that right now because we know that the solution is technical and it works. Adding more payment options, tracking data. So initially we have a strategy to buy all the tech that we need. So we are quite small. I mean, we are the whole of our development department is less than 50 people, and I think we are about 27, 28 developers, and the rest is designers and all kind of other functions. So we are in no position to build everything ourselves. So we basically need to buy the best tech that we can get and integrate it and take control over the integrations and sort of look at ourselves as that we're building an integration platform rather than building a paywall platform. And that has worked out quite good, I would say.
And talking of things that you've sort of, well, not maybe not built, but certainly sold off, Aller actually ended up spinning out its Labrador CMS. I'm not sure what it's called now. And they sold it to other publishers. Is that something that you see publishers doing increasingly, that they're kind of crossing that bridge into becoming almost tech companies themselves?
Yeah, Dagbladet back in the days had a somewhat bigger development department because it was more tech driven, I think, then, or at least they back then had the impression that they needed to be more tech driven themselves. So in the lack of having the right CMS in the market back then to build what exactly they needed as a tool, they built actually two CMSs. The first one was called Bulldog, and then they made Labrador. And then they saw that, hey, there's a market here. Others are looking for the same that we have built. So they spun that off as a separate company called Publish Lab. We have now sold half of the shares in Publish Lab, so it's co-owned by the Norwegian broadcaster TV2. So we are more of a customer there. And of course, we see, and especially now with the data platforms and everything that is coming up, other publishers are looking into the same way of funding their development by getting other media companies to buy in on the platform, which initially I think is a good idea. But then again, it's important to remember that we are a media company and we should be a media company. And this is my personal opinion. I don't see the need for a media company to change and start looking at itself as a tech company, especially when a lot of tech companies starting to see themselves as media companies. The whole thing of seeing yourself as or trying to be something else that you are is something I find, sorry for lack of better expression, but a bit unsexy. Why would you? Why would nobody like someone who's trying to be someone else than what they are? They should be themselves instead. However, we are seeing different ways of finding revenue, and that's fair. You don't have to change being a media company and being a tech company just to justify yourself finding other revenue streams. Other media has several other revenue streams. We have a travel company, which is doing quite well. We have a weight loss company, a huge brand in Norway called Grete Rode, also selling subscriptions, but it's a different game. And we have event companies arranging concerts and shows around Norway. And that's finding other revenue streams that we build on top of our media activity, which I think is fair. So this whole selling off tech that you build doesn't necessarily have to make you a tech company, although it wouldn't hurt anyone to think more like the tech companies, but still being a media company. I mean, we are basically here to serve good journalism, and the other revenue streams should, in my opinion, support serving good journalism.
And talking of kind of well, working with other publishers around the table, you have actually been collaborating on a single sign-on project. Can you explain a bit about that and why you're doing that?
Exactly. And here's a company that's finding other sources of revenue for funding their login, A-Media. So our collaboration with A-Media goes all the way to the top. It's a good business case, and it's public that we are having this commercial sales department together called DR. But we are also using their login service, basically their identity service called AID. So when you log into one of their local newspapers, you can use the same username and password when you log into Dagbladet or Elbil or any of our other sites which have these login capabilities. And that allows us to combat the death of the third-party cookie, as you talked about a couple of shows ago. Episode I found very, very interesting, because this is actually how we are combating the death of the third-party cookie, making sure that we have everything GDPR compliant and we are able to share data about the users anonymously, making sure that we have good segments and making these segments available for advertisers who want to place ads and reach these customers. So it's a very, very good, interesting collaboration. We are not competing against each other in these markets as well, so it makes it easy as well.
And you've, as part of that, you've also built your own platform for the customer data. How does that all fit in with the single sign-on?
Yeah, that works quite good. And this as well is all about integrating and making sure that we get all the data in the same pool. So we can get data from subscription, CRM, we get data from what they read. We have Sol, the news aggregating site. They are giving us information about what the stories are about. So we can harvest information from lots of different sources. And one of them is also to help create the commercial segments. But I think even more important is that we are able to output it as personalization on the site. So we are able to switch out some of the content on our front page.
Yeah.
Not everything, but some of it, with content that we think is, or not think that, but what we know is something that you might want to read more than what is already there. So basic is if you've seen a story a couple of times, we know you're not going to click on it, so we can show you something else instead. And being able to that on the content side is obviously increasing page views, it's increasing loyalty, make sure that the site feels up to date and relevant for you as a user. But we can also do that with ad spaces. So right here, if we, let's say, have a high demand for sponsored content or content marketing, we can use some of these spots and switch them out with content marketing. Or if we are getting low value ads from the network, we can show premium content instead, which we know what price has, sort of, if we would buy it as ad space to make sure that we are gaining money off it. So that whole data platform and what has done there is really, really interesting. And we've been around as well, and we know that others are doing quite interesting stuff, but to the extent that we have been able to do the personalization and data platform and have everything ready for the outtakes is absolutely astonishing. I mean, from the front page itself, we are now within a time frame of 24 hours able to show up to four times as many stories. The distribution, by just having the option to change out content that we know that you as a user has seen and show you something else, makes the value, the distribution value of one page, which is the front page, and front page are really heavily drivers in Norwegian news sites, increase by a lot. So all of this with the data platform and making sure that, yes, we are still using the other tools, third-party tools to some extent, but all of our data has to go into that platform because we are using it. And it is really creating value. I mean, everybody's been talking for years that data is valuable, right? But
yes.
If you're not able to use it, it doesn't have any value, right? But with the data platform and the integrations and making sure that we are able to use it, it really produces hard cash flows. And that's super exciting.
And you yourself, you've actually got a background as an editor yourself. So
yeah.
When it comes to balancing business and editorial needs as a product manager, how much does that background help?
I think it helps a lot, at least a little bit, because I know that for the commercial department and for the editorial department, I know what they are struggling with. I know what their pain is and what they are trying to achieve. And I also know that the tech stuff that that we are doing is the least important thing on their list. They just want stuff to work.
Yeah.
And it balances out sort of the nagging on my part, because I get a better understanding, basically. So, but yeah, I think having that editorial background itself, at least when we're talking about personalization, because finally understanding that there is a balance and that we can't just show stories that would produce clicks, right, and page views, and then we would only serve a small subset of stories, and that would make the total editorial product very bad. So having that understanding and knowing that, of course, has a value in those discussions.
You're navigating GDPR, you've got lots to deal with, things like ad blocking. What steps are you taking to ensure that Alla Media is ready for the next 5 to 10 years with its tech?
Not taking shortcuts is an easy answer, because every shortcut will pay. You will have to pay for that sometime. And I think most of the legacy issues that we are facing now and that we're cleaning up and that I've spent 3 years cleaning up is shortcuts that has been made earlier. And that obviously has a cost. But I think also making sure that we understand the importance of finding third-party vendors that are open and that can integrate easily, that have sort of, we can see very fast if they have a API documentation, if their attitude is correct in terms of the job that we want them to do. Getting third-party vendors is always difficult because they might have a long-term agenda that doesn't necessarily fit with your, that where they want to give or they want to serve other topics as well, not only the thing that you need help with at the moment. And being clear about what we need and how we are going to use it, and finding those right vendors is an investment that I think is going to pay off for a long time. It's easy to look at a subscription management system and a CRM system as one. They look the same and you pay for almost the same things and they can do almost the same things, but they aren't and they shouldn't. And you should view them as two separate things. So having sort of that clear view in it as well, what are you buying and what are you going to use it for? And not trying to sort of fall into that big corporate pot of boiling stuff that needs to be done is hopefully making us more ready for the next 5 to 10 years than what we have been. Although we haven't been in that bad shape, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. And then finally, we ask all our guests what the last thing is you saw or read or listened to that really affected you.
Oh, so the last thing I saw that really made an impression on me, I think, was either the Chernobyl series on HBO. That really struck me and kind of scared me a bit as well, how close we were to a total catastrophe. On a lighter note, I just discovered a podcast from one of my favorite chefs where he's recording him making a dish, very nerdy for a foodie, quite soothing actually to be listening to someone really good at making food talking about making food while he's making it.
In addition to this weekly roundup of all the news and the views from the media world, we put out a weekly newsletter which contains our thoughts on some of the biggest stories, links to what we've been reading and writing, and a link to the latest episode in case you don't immediately listen to it when it comes out on the Monday, in which case, shame on you. And you can get that by going to voices.media and signing up. It's very quick, very easy, and you'll really appreciate it. You can also follow us on Twitter at MediaVoicesPod, and don't forget that we have an archive section on voices.media, along with a few articles, right, that people can go back and check.
Yeah, some of our writing. And I've mentioned this every week, I'm going to mention it again. If you are a publisher with a podcast, please enter our Publisher Podcast Awards. We've had some really good entries already, but there are only 6 weeks to go. So go to publisherpodcastawards.com to get your entry in.
But until next week, when we're going to be back, hopefully with Peter and with another absolutely fantastic guest, have a fantastic week and thank you for listening.
Bye.